Welcome out there in radio land. You are listening to Linda Sims, and the name of this program is called A Voice of a People. I'm here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can download free app called TuneIn and search on any electronic device, iPhones, cell phones, laptops, or computers, and search WWGH. You'd be surprised about the many shows or talk show programs we have to offer you. So take advantage of that. Remember, the app is called TuneIn and search WWGH. If you would like to call in during this time on the air from 4:15 until the top of the hour, 5 p.m., the telephone number here is 740-383-9944. If you have any questions or if you would like to make any comments, again, 740-383-9944. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They also have an ongoing announcement, free produce market every second Saturday of every month. That will take place this Saturday, July the 11th. The time is from 12 noon until 2 p.m. Please make note of that on your calendars or share with someone else who may be in need of free produce. We have Inspect Ohio, your one-call home inspection company with 27 years of experience working for you. They are located in LaRue, Ohio, and telephone number there is 740-262-0939. Last but not least, Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-382-8552. And I'd like to start my show off with a thought for today. It's titled, Giving My Best. I can only give my best to others when I am in touch with the best in myself. So don't put yourself down. Just know that all of us have some good in us, and we have the best in us also. We can be mean and selfish sometimes, but there's some good things in us to look forward to and to share with other people. So that's a thought for today, and I'm so excited. My guest today is Whitney Gurman. How are you today, Whitney?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to have you too. And she is an intergroup dialogue facilitator. Her resume is extremely long, okay?
Where did you get this from? I don't know if I said anything.
I know you don't have to. I just say your name, it just pops up.
Okay.
Yes, and Whitney does a lot of social justice. She has a lot of knowledge and resources to engage in meaningful dialogue. She produces positive outcomes for racial healing, healthy food, and affordable housing. Mm-hmm. So, yes, your resume is quite long, Whitney.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
You're a busy young lady.
I am. I feel like social justice is so big that it like leads me down various paths, but I'm so intrigued by them and so curious just personally.
Right.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Hey, it is what it is.
That's right. My mom always used to say that. It is what it is.
That's right. And she's so right, right? We can't change it.
Absolutely.
All we can do is build on.
And it's a credit to so many people in my life that have like mentored me and helped me, you know, personally become aware of so many issues.
Okay.
I actually attended University of Michigan, which is funny because I work for Ohio State now.
Right, right.
But I participated in their Intergroup Dialogue Institute. And as a student, experiencing dialogue around race and gender and sexuality helped me become aware of blind spots that I had, and it really encouraged me to offer resources and workshops in a similar vein to others in the community.
That's great. That's great. We need more people like you. Absolutely. And, you know, it's not so much that you want people to, you just want people to relate to you and not to always just be passive and, oh, it's okay, but it's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. We just want people to relate. I mean, and I think that goes for any group of people, no matter what race they are or no matter what obstacles they may have in their life. You know, and to be dismissive of people is very rude, I think. What about you? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I feel like I've been putting a lot of emphasis lately on healing.
Right, right.
Because there's just been so much unrest with the virus and the protest. And my background is social work. So, like, I'm coming from that counseling perspective, too.
Okay.
Of how do we, like, heal history that we're in, and my healing might look different from yours.
True.
I talk a lot about race, and I'm not sure why. That's always just, ever since I was a little girl, I've just been drawn to, like, the civil rights movement and racial justice work. But oftentimes when we talk about issues of race, like, we think of it very cognitively.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't got us very far.
No, it hasn't. No. Either side, it hasn't gotten us anywhere. And that's another issue because I heard Sunday my pastor say, well, we're trying to blame the past and what happened way back there. But the problem is, it continues to happen.
Yeah.
And maybe we could forget about the past if it wasn't just brought up in our face all the time. Just a different... maybe a different person doing it, or, you know, in different circumstances, different states. It doesn't matter. It's still the same thing to us, you know.
Yeah.
And when something was brought to everyone's attention in the world, with Floyd, George Floyd, it was like, I'm sure everybody's heart sunk to see that, you know. So let's not say we're still living in the past. No, we're living in the present.
Absolutely. It's trauma.
Yes.
You know, and trauma is not just something that lives in our brains.
Right.
It lives in our bodies. And our bodies respond to trauma in three ways. Either fighting. So, you know, for white people, we might fight against notions of racism to protect ourselves.
Right.
To protect the assumptions that we've long held on to. So people get on Facebook and they fight with one another, right? We may flee, which is another trauma response, which means I don't want to deal with this. I'm just going to turn my attention somewhere else. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to avoid it. Fight, flee, and freeze. Sometimes we just don't know what to do. And so we just stay as is and aren't willing to change.
Yeah.
So when we view it as a trauma, we can recognize that this isn't something to get over quickly.
No, it's not.
It's been passed down to you and to I in different ways.
Right.
But we need healing, right?
Yes, we do need healing. And you were asking me what Tim and I talked about yesterday. One of the things we talked about was the system of racism. And we also consider it slavery still going on, just different techniques about doing it, you know. But he was also saying about the black-on-black crime and the killings that has spurred up. You know, even he was saying that we were even taught, it's been embedded in us to hate one another.
Yeah, absolutely. White supremacy has assaulted black bodies for centuries. And so white supremacy impacts all of us in the fact that, you know, Malcolm X said, who taught you to hate yourself?
Right,
right. Who taught you to hate each other?
Right.
It's the white person. It's the, you know, and I'm talking very systematically.
Right.
It's been passed down
from generations to generations. That's crippling. That's very crippling. And it hurts us to even see, like, our brothers killing our brothers and our sisters and children. I mean, these past two holidays, it's like, what is going on?
Yeah, and even within, like, white culture, there's a lack of appreciation and care for one another. And I've been wondering lately, like, how can we change that? Like, how can we reclaim whiteness in a way that's positive? And because how, you know, in the beginning, before the 1600s, what poor white people were oppressed by rich white people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came to America and we thought, oh, well, we better unite
mm-hmm.
if we want to overrule Native Americans and if we want to enslave people. So then
right.
it wasn't until, you know, late 1600s that white became, like, no one referred to each other as white until the late 1600s. And that's when we started saying, hey, we got to work together so
right.
we can assault people with darker skin colors mm-hmm. than us. And it's, yeah, it's a trauma, right? It just
right.
Has taught you to hate one another and for us, above anything else, to hate you.
Right. And to think that it's still there.
Yeah.
It's still there, you know. And it's, so we can't erase that away any easier than we can erase white supremacy and the systematic slavery. And, you know, it's just not that simple.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, because I notice when I talk to groups about white supremacy,
mm-hmm.
there's this thing that white people do where they say, oh, that's not me. Like, I don't have a Nazi flag, or I have a friend who's black. And that is, again, that, like, trauma response to
mm-hmm.
deflect and disassociate.
Right.
So I really encourage people, you know, people are listening and maybe they're having those thoughts. If
true.
That's not me. What does your body feel like when we talk about these issues around
mm-hmm.
race? For some white people, it makes us feel nervous. You know, our chest tightens. You know, we might feel it in our throat and in
yeah.
our stomach. But that's part of the work, is being mindful to that and not pushing away from it.
Oh, wow. Just accepting it and going with it, because it's going to build up those feelings. And, you know, we feel the same way when we talk about race. Because we don't know if we should really go there. And there's a little tinge of fear there, you know, of what may, the lash that may come back at us. We're not sure if we can have a civil conversation about it, you know, without
mm-hmm.
offending somebody. And see, that's the thing. It's offensive.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how you try to smooth it over, or to someone that's like offensive, and they're like, well, why don't you just go on and get over it?
Yeah.
I'm like, I wish I could.
Yep.
You know, we really wish that we could. You know, we really wish that we could get past black on black crime.
Yeah. And I think part of that is white people are socialized to want black people to serve and to soothe them and their emotions. And as a result, you may be conditioned by feeling like you have to serve or soothe the emotions of white people that are uncomfortable talking about race, and not knowing, when you enter a room, is this a place to be myself or to talk about my opinions?
Right. And we're going to see that later today, right?
Yeah, yeah, we have a
bit
today.
That's going to be a big experience today, you know, because it's, some things will be laid on the line and we'll have to confront. Because if we don't confront, we can't bring about a change. Is
yeah.
that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, part of thinking of this in terms of trauma is trauma wants us to act very quickly. And we've seen this really institutionally, where George Floyd was murdered
mm-hmm.
and all these institutions kind of hurried and put out statements and
right.
promises to do this or that. And I celebrate and I appreciate their efforts.
Yes.
But also, part of healing from trauma is slowing down. And so I encourage white people and white-led organizations to slow down.
Right.
And to do some internal work on themselves.
Right.
And maybe part of that is apologizing. And knowing that healing happens in relationship.
Right.
And so
right.
how do we repair the relationships that we've caused harm to?
And that's something else. You don't hear too much apologies. You know, well, that wasn't me. That was 400 years ago, but it is you. It's just come down through the line, you know. And it doesn't even have to be about that. I've learned over the years, even if I'm not at fault,
yeah.
I'm good to say, I'm sorry. You know, I'll just say it and go on about my business, because sometimes it's needed. you know, it is not so much as pointing a finger at me, it's something that I really did, but hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry it happened. The way it happened. You know, but
and just no excuses. Like I've gone to some meetings in Delaware too, and I just wanna tell these organizations that are led by a lot of white people, all you have to do is apologize and own up to it.
Right.
I think it's really hard. I think it's hard for us to say, you know, I work for the Ohio State University, and we have stolen land from Native Americans, and we our institution was often built by the backs of black people, and we, in our programming and work, have neglected people of color for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for the role we've played in white supremacy. That's all, you know, that's all it takes sometimes is that
true.
First step.
True. That's relating mm-hmm. to us. That's relating to the wrong side of history.
Yeah, and not You're, brushing it away. Like
right,
said.
Right. Not just dismissing it and going on like we're going to forget about it. And we can't because it won't stop.
Right.
If it would stop, that'd be different. Just like the black on black crime. It slowed down for a moment, but then it like escalated all out of control. It's like, wow, what, you know. And when Tim talked yesterday, I like, okay, I clicked. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is all systematic.
Yeah.
And we suffer. We still suffer the most.
Yeah. And how does your community come together united?
Right.
Because to Malcolm X's point again of who taught you to hate yourself.
Right.
It's white supremacy.
Right.
So don't fall for that.
That's right. So, but then there's inner healing for us too.
Absolutely.
You know, like he said, he got the books, Bibles, and he started working on his inner self. And what you put in you comes out of you, you know. And we need to take time with our young people, our black young boys and young girls, and start from an early age building into them who they really are,
yeah.
You know, and not who someone says that they are, you know, because mm-hmm. it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I really like that point of belonging and knowing you belong to a people and a place.
Right.
And helping young people and just even any age know what your healing ceremonies are and sharing that with others.
True.
I've been thinking a lot about that, trying to get into my ancestry and figure out how are the ways that my people have healed. And my family has always done a lot of gardening, and mm-hmm. Being close to the earth is a way that they've healed. And mm-hmm. religion and Christianity and prayer and community is a way that my family over generations have healed.
That's good. That's good. And I think, even like I was sharing with you before, my mother and how they always had gardens, and they would walk to the garden plot wherever they had them at throughout the city, and they would plant, you know, and that every day they'd be up there hoeing in there, and they would sing way back before them. They would sing those songs to the Lord, you know, and that was their way of releasing whatever they were going through. So they were being healed, you know, during the process. So that's a great thing to have, you know, your mind just taken away and focused on something else.
Yeah, I love that analogy of the singing, too, because part of, like, it's called somatics, and mm-hmm. it's a type of therapy that
right.
treats trauma, is releasing that. And so there's, like, humming that you can do, and mm-hmm. drumming, and singing, and all that is, research is showing us that heals the body.
Yes.
The trauma that is embodied.
Yes.
Those ways.
And even, gives you peace.
Absolutely. And even like protesting and thinking about chanting that we can do together.
Right, right.
Call and responses.
Right.
My daughter Issa, she knows, like, every time she hears no justice, she always says no peace. It's
so
really
she
cute.
Knows already, huh?
She's gone to a few protests with us, and it's been a really good experience for her. You know, she's usually like wild and loud, and she got really quiet, and I asked if she was scared, and she wasn't. I think she was just observing
yeah.
what was going on.
Taking it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
wow.
now she's chanting in the living room.
Is she? That's cute. That's cute. But that's what we should be doing. Teaching them now. You know, and the Bible says, train up a child in the way they should go. When they're old, they will not depart. Well, they don't mean when they're tall as you.
Yeah.
They mean from the cradle.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you start to teach your children. And a lot of us nowadays, we've just gotten away from that. And we went to our kids that are as tall as us, and we want to try to tell them what to do, and they're not hearing it.
Yeah.
You know? They don't want to hear it, you know?
And part of, like, I think our escape is, especially that flee response, is I'm just going to avoid the conflict in the world and get on my phone and just scroll for a while, you know? And so then how do we teach our kids when they have conflict?
Right.
Or when there's tragedy, how are we going to teach them how to process it?
Right.
And sit with those emotions and notice them. And not to judge yourself or take yourself too seriously, just noticing how your body responds when you watch the news.
Or right.
When you get in a heated debate, like, what does it feel like in your body? I've been trying to practice that more, that mindfulness and meditation is difficult because a lot of times I just want to avoid it. It's not comfortable.
It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable. That's just like having a bad marriage and you try to, you know, deal with those same issues over and over and over that you can't seem to get past, you know, like, oh, forget it. I don't have time. I don't want to deal with that, you know.
Yeah, and it's, like, painful to get to the root of things. Like,
yeah, it is.
I see a lot of people right now reading books and understanding white privilege and fragility, but tell you what, like, going through the experience of understanding, like, what my whiteness meant was not something I would put on Facebook. Like, it was not glamorous. It was painful.
Right.
I felt, like, panic attacks, anxiety, guilt, shame. And, you know, you just kind of got to sit with that stage for a while.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And I'm not suggesting people don't do anything, but I think there's so much learning to be done. And just knowing yourself.
That's true. That's so true. That is so true. So I did want to talk about, I know I asked you, were there going to be any statues brought down in Delaware? But I hear the whipping post has been removed. Is that true?
The what post?
They claim there's a whipping post in Delaware. And I don't know if they're talking about Delaware, Ohio, or state of Delaware. Or
I don't know about that. Yeah, I'm not sure. Have I heard anything?
A whipping post,
yeah,
and I'm thinking.
I would hope that would get
I'm like, where is that at?
Wow.
Yeah, a whipping post. Yeah.
You know, in Delaware with Rutherford Hayes, there's so much miseducation around the presidency that he had. And I think in the conversations I've participated, a lot of people don't realize, like, the role he played when he withdrew federal troops. When he did that from the South during Reconstruction era, it really caused a lot of harm because that's when white supremacy started to rise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so people view him as an abolitionist, but in reality, it was part of the Great Compromise that they would give him the presidency if he would withdraw federal troops, and
he
that's
did.
Exactly what happened, and violence increased.
Wow. Sometimes it's more important to a person to be elevated, you know, and set up on a pedestal than to really deal with or to, you know, keep down some of the things that's going on or trying to deal with those things instead of empowering them to exhalate out of control, you know. It's sad that we all have to suffer through this right now, but what can we do?
Yeah, and I think it's hard because we look back at history with such rose-colored glasses sometimes, and we idolize people, and then we look closer, and wait.
Oh, yeah.
maybe this isn't exactly how it was. And I think it's okay. Like, it's okay for us to look at these idols and see their faults because that's human, right?
Right. And why do we need all these idols? You know, it's like we have a God. We're supposed to have one God and not to look to man for what he's done for us and, you know, things like that. I did want to talk to you about the forum that you had in Delaware, Ohio. And how do you think the positivity of having one of those in Marion, Ohio?
The forum in February?
Yes. It was on racism, wasn't it?
Yeah. I feel like... So I've only lived in Delaware for 3 years, but I really feel like there was a lot of interest and a really diverse group that it helped assess where people were at.
Yes.
At a large perspective, because there were older people there, younger people there, and it kind of became a launching pad for new conversations.
Yes.
After that forum, I mean, our phones were just blowing up.
Really?
And I had a lot of white people calling and asking questions and wanting more. I asked people to slow down a little bit.
Right, right,
There's a lot of sense of urgency in this work. Like, to sustain ourselves, we gotta take care of ourselves and go at a nice pace. Like, it's not a sprint.
Right,
it's a marathon.
Right.
But it was really, I thought it was a really meaningful conversation.
And I did too.
We've had more of them during the protesting, and hoping to do even more follow-up intentional education, because that's what, you know, that's what we're talking about, is this miseducation piece.
Yes. Yes, we are. Education empowers us, you know, not to repeat the same things, but to put new language to it and new perspectives on it, you know, that will help us dig our way out of this, hopefully, you know, because like I said, I think we're all hurting.
Yeah.
Black, white, indifferent, you know, I think we're just all hurting right now.
Yeah, I brought this book with me because it's been kind of my Bible this summer.
Okay.
It's called My Grandmother's Hands, and it's about racialized trauma and pathways to mend our hearts and bodies. And it talks exactly about that, is like how the white body suffers, how the black body suffers, and how the police body suffers under white supremacy in America.
Mm.
And it's just really given me a different perspective. In February, when we did the workshop, I did a lot of like work around implicit bias, and that's becoming really popular.
Okay.
Implicit bias training. And yes, we need it. And we need to do this work of how it's internalized in all of us. And so I think that's a perspective I would add and contribute differently if we had a forum in Marion.
Yeah, I thought about that. I thought that would be very advantageous for us. Where? I don't know. We would probably have to still do our social distancing and wear a mask and the whole nine yards. Because coronavirus doesn't seem to be going away, none too fast.
Yeah.
It's still here.
And, well, at Ohio State, in the college I work for, we just got a new diversity, equity, inclusion officer, and we have a task force. So I really love that Marion has already, like, ahead of the game, and I like being able to say that this is the work that we've already started together.
Right.
And if we can kind of show the other counties what Marion is doing.
Right.
And how Ohio State, you know, I'm exploring like how we can play a role in this.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't have to be apolitical or I don't know what the right word is, but we don't have to just stay neutral, you know. And I think that workshop, I actually had my boss come to that, and they were able to see the kind of role that my peers and I can have
right
in this space.
Right, that's good. So, like, we're still talking about racism being a public health issue, and that I think the Department of Education here in Marion has put out a statement about that. Health Department also. What is the extent of the statements? I don't think I've read anything about either one of them.
Yeah,
do you know?
I have to pull it up. I know one thing that's really important is oversampling data from people of color. Back in February, myself and Johnny Jackson, who has contributed significantly to the statements that have come out, attended a community health assessment meeting put on by the health department. And one thing we had discovered at the time, and we had asked for data to be broken down by race, is they really didn't sample enough. So they sampled, they had questions with youth, but at that time they had only interviewed 22 black students about their health behaviors. And so with only 22, you can't...
what was the age group, did they say?
I think they did it at Grant in a classroom at Harding.
Okay.
But you can't, with that low of number, you can't correlate anything. You
right.
can't say that black people are experiencing more food insecurity
right.
than white people or Latinx or whatever the demographic might be. So the fact that the health department is now committing to making sure they have enough numbers... in a few years when they do this assessment again, then we can start drawing some correlations.
Right.
Really, that's the accountability measure.
Mm-hmm.
Is we can't hold them accountable to anything right now because there's no data for it.
Wow. I guess not. I mean, 22 people, that's not even a classroom, is it?
No, it's a very small number. With Hispanic, it was 24. Native Hawaiians was 3. American Indian was 23. Asian was 10. But for white, it was 430.
Okay.
So a lot of the data right now is reflecting actually public health problems of the white community more than anyone else. That leaves us with some challenges.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It seems like the whites took first precedence again, huh?
Yeah.
Over the rest.
And, you know, we can augment some of that data with data that might be collected statewide.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had pulled up the other day, I saw in the New York Times there's a new tool that allows you to look at the coronavirus rate
okay.
by county and by race. And so in Marion County, there have been 223 cases. Of those cases, 135 of them are white, 6 are black, and 10 are Hispanic. That's pretty close to the demographics, but that Hispanic one, the 10 cases, I think I looked up, it was about like 4%
okay.
of the total cases, and in terms of population, they make up about 2%.
Okay.
So it is kind of concerning that they're at those rates.
Well, we're in a highly populated white area, too, so I can also understand those high numbers on that side. What are we, 8% in Marion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although only 72% of those cases have reported race and ethnicity. So that can be challenging too.
Okay.
I know a lot of people are nervous to tell the health department or hospital about their race or ethnicity, but if you're ever asked that question, it's so important because
to answer it.
We can't address these disparities without
right.
knowing who's affected.
Right.
So I'm just going to put that out there.
That's like the census too, right?
Absolutely. Like, do the census. I think there's some fears, definitely because of the way that government enslaved Africans.
Yes, yes.
Brutalized Native Americans.
Right, right.
Put kids in cages.
Yes. Oh, my. My. And are they using the census to do this? I mean, they're getting their numbers or information from somewhere. We're voluntarily giving it to them, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like, I think, unfortunately, too, data is often weaponized. So I've heard in a lot of meetings, people say, well, African Americans only make up 8% of the population. And I don't like when people say that. And I also think that...
like it's not enough to matter, right?
Right. Like, people use numbers to diminish
yeah.
people's existence.
Right.
And that's not okay.
No, it's not.
And I think if Johnny Jackson were here, he'd also talk about the school data, because school data shows this, a significant number of students that are multiracial compared to the general population. So, as the younger... generation goes into adulthood, we might see Marion's demographics change.
Right, right. Right. That's another, I think it's a plus. Some people think it's a negative, but there are a lot of whites that are marching and protesting with blacks, and I know some people are agitated by that, and I can't say the phrase on the radio, but you know how they say, well, okay, you love those black people, yeah, so much, so you just stay over there with them, you know. Yeah. But I don't know if they realize how important that is to us. That they're relating to us and they're walking side by side with us, you know, just like even when the slaves came from the south and to the north where it was supposed to be more freedom, you know, there were white people who opened up their doors and helped us to find the Underground Railroad and all that in different areas, you know, just hide us and things like that. We needed those people.
Yeah, and I think those are the mentors in history that I look to, is like, what is the white abolitionist tradition and how can I play a part in that?
Right, right.
Today? In Delaware, you know, last Friday when we marched, and anyone can march with us, it's Fridays at 6 p.m., but it was so hot.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of older people that have been marching and are just like, we can't do it this week.
Right.
We're tired.
Right.
And so it gives us an opportunity to say, hey, you don't have to, like, we will be here to march. We're young.
Right.
This is everyone's fight.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And I don't think we've had any marches in Marion for the past two weekends. I don't think it should subside. I really don't. I think, and maybe I'm wrong by this, but I thought when they went to Martin Luther King to have their protest, that kind of, erased what was going on downtown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought this should be the focal point.
Yeah.
Instead of out there.
Yeah.
Who cares about Martin Luther King Park area? You see where I'm coming from, right? And I thought, why aren't you at the park right downtown? You know, there's a park down here too. Because if you're going to march, you want to be effective. You don't want to be hidden away somewhere, you know, where people really don't care about that area anyway. You know, it's the depressed area. That's what they call it.
And these are where the government buildings are too. So they're the ones that are making the choices.
There you go.
You know, the health department is led by a white person.
Right.
County commissioners are white. City council is white.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any government agency run by a person of color?
No. Not one. It used to be Community Action Center.
Okay.
It used to be. But she passed away some years ago, and then when it changes hands, it's the white person comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that's something else we needed to talk about, was job security and just getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're so underhanded by whites, you know, or one of the best jobs I had, the girl's position I took, I don't know why she was so upset with me. She went higher up than I did. You know, I took her position.
Yeah.
She did all she could to get me fired and got me fired.
Wow. Yeah, I think I remember you telling that story before.
Yeah, and it's like, well, why?
Yeah.
You know?
And then it is hard because then if you get a job, are you the only black person there?
Yeah, like in school.
Mm-hmm.
Like in school.
How does that white space?
And I don't think white people really consider that. They already consider you out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we already know where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Right. Now, how do I feel being here? Well, in a way, I feel out of place, but I know how to work here.
Yeah.
I know how to smile. I know how to come up to you and say, well, good morning, how you doing today, Whitney, or whatever, you know. I know how to do that. A lot of blacks know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, because, hey, this is our world.
Yeah.
Every day from school age, you know, like kindergarten, first grade, second grade. I didn't have any blacks in my classroom till third grade.
Yeah, you've had to learn to survive white supremacy, and we know as a default. We don't even realize there's a white culture, because to us, this is just what society is.
Yeah.
But then, wow, when someone points it out to you, it's... You see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I read an article about, I think it was called Just Walk On By. This black man had just subconsciously noticed about himself that he would hum a lot. Mm-hmm. He would sing this little jingle in the presence of white people. And one day his wife pointed out to him and said, "Why do you do that? You know, I never thought about it before. I think I do it as a way to calm white people's anxiety about me being in a white space."
See there?
And how many of those subtle things do you think you do and you don't even notice?
I don't know. Even when I go to church, my church, Sunday, I was like, I thought there were more black people in here than this. You know what I'm thinking? In a total of like almost half the church, I'm the only black there, and I'm thinking, wow. But I can float with that. I can go with that. You know what I'm saying? Say hi, and well, we can't hug anymore because of Corona. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I've learned to survive. I guess, like you said, you know, I've learned to survive.
That's what I'm really curious about, is how many subtle things people of color do to their body that over time contributes to chronic disease.
You have to build yourself up, yeah.
Yeah.
Before I even go home, I had to practice my smile and all that, you know, all that. So, I don't know.
Yeah. And sometimes it's white people, we don't even realize we're doing it. James Baldwin also talked about this and wrote about it. Just about how white people expect black people to serve or suit them. And it's very subconscious. Like, I don't think I'm ever explicitly telling black people to serve me or soothe me, but, you know, I notice, like, online, people say, you know, a lot of white people, white liberal people especially, they'll stand up for racial justice and then maybe feel vulnerable and then go to their black friend and say, "I'm not racist, right?" Or, mm-hmm. "This was the right thing to say, right?"
Right.
We had to build our community of white people that are committed to racial justice and support one another, so we're not putting on more emotional labor.
Right. You're right.
Y'all have done enough. You don't owe anything. What do we owe to black America is the question.
True.
And I heard someone say, we should be lucky that black people are not asking for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
We're just asking for equality.
Right. Right. And we already have that. It's just that it's not recognized.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we're 3/5 of a human being or half of a human being. Now, come on now.
Yeah.
We're human.
Yep.
You know, because I can give blood and you can use my blood, right? Yep. So it's not like I'm an ape or what they tried to say that we are. You mm-hmm. don't use ape blood when mm-hmm. you're dying of cancer right. and need a transfusion, you know? So, and I think some of those things, when people look at us, that's what they see.
Yeah.
They still don't see a person, you know. They don't. And I don't know if that will ever change with some people.
Yeah, I mean, even thinking Black Lives Matter, I mean, who could contend with that? Like, who could really argue that? Aren't we just saying?
Oh, they do. Oh, they do.
You know?
Like, they do. Yeah.
Just mind-blowing to me.
Well, all lives matter. Yeah. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, we're not saying they don't.
Yep.
You know, but are you being slaughtered in the street? You know, like.
That's their fight response. And so.
Yes.
How do we get them out of that, like, part of their brain that operates in fight, freeze, or freeze, and move to the part of the brain, the prefrontal mm-hmm. cortex, that allows them to problem solve?
Right.
So as long as they stay in the back of the brain,
they're going to fight against it.
They're not going to be able to make change. Right. And they'll move to the amygdala, and that's when we see a lot of emotions and white fragility.
So in other words, for you saying that, they don't believe anything's wrong.
No. This is what we know.
Right.
Since the time I was born.
Right.
Subconsciously and consciously, I've been taught that I'm the superior race.
Or, right. And then, say a white guy has interracial children. They might not be interracial with blacks, but why you keep continuously throwing that up in my face? That has nothing to do with my struggle. You know what I'm saying? Your children do not suffer what my children and grandchildren have suffered. So I don't even want to hear that you have interracial children.
Yeah, I think white people use that as deflection.
Yeah, it is.
Either I have biracial
children. Well, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
get over what?
I married a black person, yeah. So therefore I'm not racist. No,
or a Hawaiian lady, or a Chinese, mm-hmm. or a Somalian, you know. It has nothing to do with us.
Yeah, there's a very distinct, like, even among other people of color, other racial minorities, there's still something very distinct about anti-blackness.
Oh, yeah.
That Asians are also taught, you know.
Oh, yeah. We're the most hated people in the world, and, mm-hmm. and people say, oh, you're not, but we are.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Bible tells us we're the most hated people in the world. But, you know, a lot of people think that they're talking about the Jews that's over there in Israel right now. Mm-hmm. But they have a country.
Yeah.
Right? They're in a country, and they claim it to be theirs. So their struggle is not even our struggle.
Yeah. And see, I view, like, black people as God's chosen people, because how else could people be so resilient? How else can you be thriving and surviving and be here today talking to me if it weren't for God anointing your people and building this internal resiliency to escape slavery, to escape Jim Crow laws, to escape police brutality?
Right.
There's something godly about that.
There is something godly about that. And a lot of people don't want to realize it, but that's so, so true, Whitney. I think it's 4:59. Thank you!
Thank you! I can keep going. I appreciate you so much.
I've enjoyed you today.
I look forward to seeing you later tonight.
Right, right.
We're talking about this.
Thank you for coming and sharing with us. Whitney Gurman, I'm sure those of you have heard of her and enjoyed her tonight. You've been listening to Linda Sims, A Voice of a People. Thank you.
WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For former coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Jim Tressel.
You know, it's interesting because everybody knows the story, obviously, of what happened there. But when that all was going down, because that's a rough period, that's a rough year. And, you know, as it comes out in Sports Illustrated that, you know, these emails were flying around on April 2nd and on December 9th, you publicly said you didn't know anything about it, and it all came down that way. Do you wish you had said, yes, I know about it on December 9th, or had reported it earlier?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure that you have all the dots connected there. But if you ask, do I wish throughout the course of the entire situation that we would have made some different decisions, you know, without a doubt. But I'm not sure you have it exactly right.
What did I have incorrect? I want to be correct with this.
Oh, you know, that's for you to try to figure out and you know, for you to know or not know, but, you know, it came down the way it did.
To former Ohio State Marching Band Director, John Waters.
From what I understand, the defamation lawsuit is a million-dollar lawsuit. I think that's what's been reported. Who knows if that's correct or not. But if they said, John, we made a mistake just like you said, come on back, would you drop the lawsuit?
Yeah, you know, we'd have to consider all the, you know, all the pros and cons, because there's been a lot of water over the dam, so to speak. But you know, if they would say, yeah, come on back, you know, let's let cooler heads prevail, absolutely, I would get rid of the lawsuit. You know, the lawsuit was just a means by which we could open the conversation with the university. And you know, as again I say, that all I have is my honor and my word and my reputation, and that's what I'm fighting for. And certainly, in doing so, I'm fighting for the reputations of all those alums and students who've been you know, misrepresented by this whole thing.
Being that this is a defamation lawsuit, obviously you feel they have defamed you in some way. When people see John Waters today, what do you think the interpretation is because of what went down?
You know, I think, and it's borne out every time I walk into the grocery store or you know, in public, you know, people say, you got the short end of the stick. You were the scapegoat, you know, person after person tells me that.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com.